Now it's time to get the latest from the quarterback of the pack, Aaron Rodgers. It's Tuesdays with Aaron. Here's your host, Jason Wilde.
It is the Aaron Rodgers Show on ESPN Milwaukee, ESPNMilwaukee.com, and all of our many affiliates. Joined on the program by the reigning Super Bowl MVP, the quarterback of the 10-0 Green Bay Packers, and a man who will be spending Thanksgiving in beautiful Detroit, Michigan. It is Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Aaron, how are you today?
Doing good. I like this better on Tuesdays when it's an off day.
a little busy today.
It's a long day, yeah.
There's a lot to get to today. I know you took an important phone call earlier this afternoon from a close friend. I want to talk about that, but before we even start, I do want to ask you, you doing okay? I was a little worried about you on Sunday. Now, I have a similar personality to you. I have very high expectations, but I think we all know that while you're a very accomplished actor from your work in the Discount Double Check ad and everything else, that was genuine how you were post-game and how you felt about how you played. Are you, with a little distance in between that time and now, are you feeling a little bit better? Or are you still pretty tough on yourself?
I'm glad we won. I just wish I would have played better. I just feel like I missed some throws that I usually hit. I mean, that's the most frustrating thing. I mean, you're never going to be perfect. But when you're missing by the kind of throws I missed, that's when it gets frustrating. And, you know, from an outsider's perspective, if you just saw the stat line or something, you'd be like, you played a pretty good game. But pretty good is not up to the standard that we've been setting around here.
Now, are you still, you know, I feel like we talk on every week about this 10-0 team and we nitpick, but now you're doing it to yourself.
You do, yeah. No, what are the first thing I said? I said, I'm happy we won.
Yeah.
The win is the most important thing. I just feel like if I play better in a game like that, then it's not as close as it turned out to be.
So there were a couple of throws, I think they were toward Jennings, that weren't where you wanted them, right?
Yeah.
And then the interception.
Right.
How many throws are we talking? What's the difference between feeling good about your performance and feeling the way you did?
I think we're talking about six legitimate throws.
Okay. You had 11 incompletions or 10 incompletions and a pick.
Right.
So you're saying that you're
six. I mean, I threw the pick. I threw it where I wanted to. I never saw the corner. I mean, have me the corner who dove down in on the fake, and the angle that James came out at, I never saw Mac outside of him. So I'm not – that wasn't a bad throw. That was just a bad read.
Okay.
So.
We'll get to some of our inside the helmet stuff later. We got to get to this, though. Your very good friend Ryan Braun, the NL MVP, he said his first call – to a non-family member was to you. Were you in the middle of practice? Did he leave a message, or did you get to actually talk to him?
No, I haven't got to talk to him on the phone yet, but really excited for him. You know, Kevin and I were actually talking about last night about the MVP getting crowned today and hoping it'd be Bronny, but knowing that, you know, maybe Prince would steal some votes for him because on the same team, or maybe Prince would even win the MVP, but I'm really happy for him.
Let me ask you this, because we had an interesting debate with my friend Drew Olson and Dan Needles on their show today. What is your criteria for an MVP award? What do you think it means to win an MVP?
What do you think it means to win, or what does it take?
Well, I mean, there are some that would say this guy had the best statistics, he's the MVP. The debate with Braun was him basically versus Matt Kemp, who played on a sub-500 team. How do you define an MVP?
Making your teammates better. I think you're the most important player, usually on a winning team or the best team. If you look at, a lot of times the Heisman goes to the best team's best player, or if there's no, above and beyond player on the top team, then it's the best player on a really good team. So as you're looking at the Heisman this year, Andrew Luck has got to be in the conversation because his team is very good, and he's the best player on his team. As in the past, you've seen a lot of Heisman winners maybe haven't, it's not the best projected NFL player. It's the best player on a very good team or the best team.
But you think that winning is a key component?
I think so. I think it's got to be. I think because if you're the most valuable player, you have to make your teammates and your team better.
So does this up the stakes now with your good friend? I mean, now do you have to win one?
Or he put a little pressure on me. I mean, that was part of the, the message. But you know what? I'm proud of him. He had an incredible season. He's got all the tools. He's a much improved fielder. He made some great plays and left. Obviously, incredible hitter. He stole 30 bases. It's fun to know that he's going to be in Milwaukee for a long time. I'm hopefully going to be here for a long time, and it's fun to just talking with him. We appreciate the opportunity to play in Wisconsin for sports teams and fans that really care about their sports and their players.
I'm guessing he would trade that award in a heartbeat for a World Series ring. I'm guessing you, even though you keep hearing about how you're a MVP front runner, if you win the Super Bowl, you're okay if you don't win it, or do you want to win it?
It's kind of like last year with the Pro Bowl. I mean, there was some disappointment not feeling like my fellow players in the league and coaches felt like I was good enough to be selected the Pro Bowl. But winning the Super Bowl is a lot sweeter than any individual award.
Let's talk about this week because it's a little bit different. What's it like playing on Thanksgiving? This is the first of actually three consecutive holidays you're playing on. You also play Christmas Day night and then New Year's Day. I mean, you're out here, your family's back home. New Year's Day day.
Yep.
But, you know, what's that like? And how does it, first of all, kind of impact you on a works schedule? And then how does it impact you maybe on your personal life?
Well, you learn in the NFL, you don't get to celebrate a lot of the holidays or even get to celebrate with your family a lot of time. That's the fall holidays kind of take a backseat to your job. Mike's done a great job in the past of giving us a lot of time off to be with our families around Christmas. The rumor is we'll get Christmas Eve night off from staying at the hotel, which by that time hopefully we'll have wrapped up the NFC North and a first round bye if we can play well the next 4 weeks. So that would be great. But you just get used to working on those days. It's fun to play on Thanksgiving when you're the early game because you play in Detroit, you come back, you get back around, late afternoon, early evening, and you still have time to celebrate, and you get the weekend to relax. So I think everybody kind of looks forward to this. It's a grind. Monday to Sunday to Thursday is a tough stretch. I think all of our bodies are tired, but we'll be able to gear it up for 60 minutes on Thursday, and then I'm looking forward to that rest.
What will you do on Thursday night for Thanksgiving?
There's a group of us who are probably going to get together, as long as things go well health-wise with all of us, and it's like I said, it's a tight-knit team, and we like to spend time with each other off the field.
This was one of the weirder things I've seen. I'm assuming since you're so self-aware that you know this. Did you see this poll that they took?
Yeah, I thought it was rather weird.
Your approval rating in the state of Wisconsin is 89%. I'm sorry to tell you that you are behind Abe Lincoln,
who is 91 to Jesus is 90.
Yeah. So I guess the moral of the story is here, you got to grow the beard back.
I think so.
I think that's the key.
I think so.
You'd get over the top. When you see stuff like this, now, I mean, this is a little bit silly, I know, but
yes.
Does it kind of blow you away that these kinds of conversations are even being had about you?
Yes, it does. I mean, I don't know how you react to that. I mean, you're flattered, but also a little confused and kind of weird a little bit. But if you just look at the individual approval rating statistic, I think that just is encouraging that, people are appreciative of what you're doing and how you're playing. I'm interested to see what the 11%, kind of the problem they have with me.
You stole my follow-up question.
But, it's a blessing to play in Wisconsin and to live here and enjoy the Midwest character that we have out here. And, but, the, I mean, How do you, you know, I've got to ask the question, like, you know, are you upset you're behind Jesus and Abe Lincoln? I mean,
you're ahead of Santa Claus.
That's, yeah, who else? A couple other interesting figures.
George Washington didn't do as well as you. Mother Teresa? I mean,
it's just silly.
So the 11% though are those six passes from. I mean, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah,
it does cross your mind.
Yeah.
One other thing that I talked to Charles Woodson today, and I'm doing a story about him because when you look back on Thanksgiving, the last time he played in Detroit, I remember he had the big donation to the Children's Hospital there.
Yeah, incredible.
You've told a couple of funny stories about him and how he was before.
Right.
What has it been like to get to know him as a friend? And then maybe do you guys have a connection because you do your work with the Mac Fund, and it seems to me that kids really mean a lot to both of you guys.
It's been great to get to know Charles on a personal level and to become friends with him. You know, he really has a great heart to have an influence with the platform he's been given. When you talk about the numbers, the donations that he gave last year or two years ago. Yeah,
right.
I mean, it blows you away. You know, because he's made a lot of money in his time, but to donate that kind of money that you know is going to have a direct impact on so many lives, it has to put things in perspective about where your priorities are. And that says a lot about him. You know, it's been fun to get to know him and his wife and his kids. He's been telling me some funny stories about Chase and Charles Jr., how when they wrestle, Charles Jr. is Charles Woodson and Chase is me. And it's great stories about his kids, wrestling around and playing football and stuff. And we just have a real tight-knit relationship, and it's been great to be able to play with a guy like that and see greatness every day and just to see him grow in his leadership role and really understand what an impact he can make on our guys on the team.
A couple other things before we go to our one commercial break. First of all, I think I owe you an apology from San Diego. I wrote about how you drank your grape soda, and I think I thought it was Fanta. It's Crush, isn't it? Or does it fluctuate?
No, it's definitely Crush.
Okay. What is the story behind that?
I love that. I love that drink.
I mean, you've drank it since high school, or?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed orange or grape Crush, and I don't know how it started or where I got the first one. They've been having some orange ones around, like some Fantas around that I, maybe snagged here and there. And Red has got a few stocked in the fridge around the facility, and just always enjoy having one after the game.
I came up to you after the game, and you actually had like your own little cooler with ice.
We can't give away too many secrets here, okay? But I do enjoy a PBJ and a grape Crush after the game. So.
The reason why I approached you at your locker was I did see you rubbing your throwing elbow at one point during the game. Did you? Were you playing a little bit nicked?
No, I was okay.
Okay. I love it when I ask you injury questions. It's like asking Mike McCarthy injury questions. When we come back, we will go inside the helmet. We'll talk a little bit about what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did against Jermichael Finley and Greg Jennings, and we'll look ahead to the Lions before we get to your Ask Aaron questions. This is the Aaron Rodgers Show. Welcome back to the Aaron Rodgers Show. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Hey, what do you think of B.J. Raji's running back skills, and how do they compare with Tim Maste? I asked you that after the game. I want to give you a little more time to break down the film, though.
I was happy for BJ. I just actually just talked to him, and I was making sure he got that ball from his touchdown run. I mean, how many touchdowns are you going to have? I mean, he had the one already from the NFC Championship game on the pick, but that's rare. And then he runs that one in on Sunday, doesn't get the ball. I'm like, he's like, I didn't think about it. I didn't get the ball. I'm like,
never been there before. Doesn't
I didn't
know
understand
better.
Why it took so long to see if he was in or not. Because everyone who was there, the umpire was standing right, you could tell he was in the end zone.
Yeah.
I got some questions last night on the Larry McCarron show about why didn't he do the Lambeau leap. And I was talking about how, if you remember in 2005 when Tausch caught his touchdown, the wall was a little bit lower in an area and he kind of dove into that area.
Kind of just rolled over.
Rolled over. The wall is the same height all the way around now, so I think it would have been difficult for him to get up. He gave it a little Raji, I think, when he got in. Tim, Ginge, you know, he...
Now, people should know that you give Tim a hard time. You like to tease
him. Yeah, I like to tease Tim. But Ginge, you know, he just couldn't get a grip on the ball. Now, I was impressed that he actually saw the guy early breaking through, and I was teasing about, you know, he was deking that defender. He was going to punt it. Good start to the run. Fumble. Picked it up. Good. Then he fumbled again and looked very unathletic as he was trying to grab the ball, and it kind of skirted out of bounds. Worked
and
out of the first down. We got a touchdown on the drive, so I got to give him credit for that. But for a guy who was, you know, all Kentucky in high school and baseball, you know, always plays well in the Donald Driver Celebrity Softball event. He shows some athleticism at times. That was a less than athletic showing for Ginge.
What, when you look at the numbers, and I know you gave us a speech at one point to say don't go run into guys that don't have any catches each week or who the low man on the totem pole is, but it is surprising when, you know, Greg has two catches and Jermichael has one. What, you know, what was Tampa doing there that, I mean, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I guess I'm saying we got to take 88 and 85 out of the game first, and then we'll deal with 87, right. 80, and 89.
And that's coming back to bite teams now, as you're seeing the kind of games Jordy's putting up. But, you know, they put Aqib Talib, their best defender, on Greg pretty much the whole game, and they put Rondae Barber a lot of times, probably their second-best cover guy, on Jermichael. So, and that being said, when Jermichael split out by himself, they would put Talib on Jermichael. So they were really worried about those guys singled up unless they're on Talib, unless they could put Talib on him. So that was their main game plan. When you're putting you know, E.J. Biggers on Jordy or anybody else on Jordy, it's a good matchup. And just one that we decided to take some chances with. And as usual, Jordy didn't let us down, made some big plays for us.
Did you talk to Jordy at all about – I've never met a player who took not wanting to be in the spotlight to the level that Jordy does. And obviously our story about him being a white receiver and the expectations of
that's
black
got a lot of runs, supposedly.
It got a lot of attention. He was trending worldwide and number one search on Yahoo and whatever else. The level that he's playing at, though, is he playing at a Pro Bowl level? I mean, is he playing at a number one wide receiver level? I'm not saying we should put him ahead of Greg or anything right. like that, but is he playing at that level?
I think he's playing great. I think you know, he's had a great season. I'm not surprised by any of his success. I mean, he is a student of the game. He really understands the game through a quarterback's eyes. He sees the game great. He's a great second reaction guy. But he's so consistent. The ball's in the air, and he's coming down with it more times than not. I mean, you know, there's been different numbers thrown around. You know, we're doing a good job completing balls over 20 yards, I believe. I'm not sure what the exact numbers are, but I think you got to give a lot of credit to Jordy. That ball's in the air, and it's tight coverage, and he's coming down with the ball a lot. So if teams are going to continue to try and take Greg or Jermichael out of the game and put a corner they're not as comfortable with or maybe not as high on Jordy, then he's going to beat you. So it's kind of pick your poison. We're fortunate enough to have guys like Greg and Jermichael who demand, you know, attention. But at some point, team's going to have to try and figure out how to stop 87.
Is there, you've been very clear about throwing the ball to the open guy. Is it sometimes tempting, though, because you know the playmakers those two guys are, to try and get them the ball when you might not otherwise think you should?
Well, I mean, I can't say it's not tempting, but you have to fight the urge to go outside the offense. You really do. And that's, I think, worked well for me this season, is to stay true to my preparation and the progressions and continue throwing it to the open guy. We've seen different weeks. You know, Greg's had his weeks. Jermichael has had his weeks. James Jones has had big games. Jordy, I thought Donald played his best game of the season this last week. He made some big plays, some plays we're used to him seeing in the past. And, you know, it's fun to watch him, you know, with that energy and him getting going early and getting more opportunities. So it's just the way it's going to go. You know, if you're going to put, you know, corners who aren't as good cover guys on Jordy and James and Donald, those guys are going to get the ball.
Have you seen this photo?
No, I haven't.
I've seen some good photoshopping. I heard about the photoshopping with with Charles Woodson in the 2016 photo, but You've now been photoshopped as Mr. Rogers of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. You like that look?
Yeah, that's a good look.
Do you have a cardigan collection?
I don't.
Let's go inside the helmet. And I know you talked about it after the game, but I thought that your explanation of the clinching touchdown was really interesting. So let's talk about what happened on the 40-yarder to Jordy.
Well, they brought empty pressure.
So is that six guys?
It was eight. It was eight. It was seven. We were blocking with six. They had two guys in the box. The safety was creeping down. In that situation, you can make a protection adjustment call that would leave the right end unblocked or take your chances you can get the ball out before the safety gets to you. So in that situation, I took my chances knowing that the safety would kind of have to run through some traffic if he wanted to get to me. And they pressed across the board. A lot of times when teams bring empty pressure, they'll play off coverage. We had a good concept on with the outside guys going vertical and the inside guys kind of running away. And Jordy had a good matchup. And as I dropped back, I looked out, saw he got a decent release. And to be honest with you, I didn't say this after the game, but when I threw the ball, I felt like I threw it out of bounds. It's crazy to say that because I feel like I've had a good feel this season on throwing the ball, but I felt like I'd thrown it too far outside.
And I think Jordy must have thought that too, right?
Well, I think he thought the ball was coming a little back shoulder maybe. And as we actually talked with some of the defenders during the game and after the game, they had worked on some back shoulder throws during the week and were a little bit expecting some of those back shoulder balls. So it was good in that game to hit some balls over the top, down the field. The back shoulder throw is a weapon when used, appropriately and properly. But, when you're throwing the ball over the top, it kind of keeps them honest on that back shoulder. So Jordy actually slowed his gait just a tad. And in doing that, the defender thought the ball was closer and also thought the ball was coming to the back shoulder and kind of made a head turn and an arm up, which slowed him down, and Jordy then adjusted to the ball and walked in and looked like he'd beat him really bad when, in fact, the guy was running pretty close to him, but a little deke on Jordy's part. Like I said after the game, whether it was intended or not, it really made the whole play.
You stole the interception discussion earlier, so we won't do that one. Is there another play, though, that you think people might be intrigued on how it played out? Because one thing I did notice is that you did a lot of checking down in this game, and maybe can you explain how that ends up happening? Because I know that's not the idea. You don't want to have to do that a lot of times, right? You would rather
not all the time, though. No. You know, I think they were playing really, really two different styles of coverage. They were in your face man coverage and bringing five guys, or they were really playing soft and rushing those four and dropping a lot of guys in the coverage. So when they do that, you really have to be patient. And if there's not the downfield, you got to trust your checkdowns are going to get those yards. And we had, a couple really, really nice checkdowns. James Starks, I believe, had six catches, and he's definitely become a weapon catching the ball. So you just have to be patient, when they're going to play soft coverage, and we took our chances when they came up impressed.
One last thing about Tampa. Does Raheem Morris talk to everybody's former, other players like he talked to you guys? It was like
Coach Morris and I have always had a good playing relationship. I have a lot of respect for him. It was funny. We played him in Tampa in 2009, and I had going into the game, I think I was listed as probable or whatever with my feet. My feet were both, I don't know if I sprained my foot or whatever, but my feet were bothering me that week. I was on the injury report, and after a couple runs, he came over to me and said, "Man, I thought you'd be limited today. They were playing like some two-man, which means nobody's on me," and he was giving me a hard time about running the ball still, even though my feet hurt. And that kind of started a funny dialogue as that game closed out. And after the game, I gave him my best and told him I respected him and the way that he coached. If you watch his interviews, I think he delivers a very honest interview and doesn't beat around the bush at all. So, and as you saw his interview after the game with us, I just saw a little snippet. He was talking about, we're 4-6 and we got an opportunity to finish with the same record as we did last year. But I really respect the way that he approaches the game. And I like his energy. I mean, he's not a big trash talker. He just likes to throw some jabs out there. And it was fun having a little conversation with him.
Did you say something to LeGarrette Blount after the game too? There's a story on NFL.com talking about how good you made him feel by saying some nice things. He said he told me I have a chance to be one of the greatest backs in the league. And he said he doesn't just say that to anybody. He feels like me and one other guy have the potential to stand out. Coming from Aaron Rodgers, it makes me feel amazing.
Well, I said that to him. We actually had a when the challenge about the whether they touched the ball, whether we touched the ball before they did on the onside kick.
Right.
It looked like we were going to get it, so I went out there to stand out there anyway, and LeGarrette was out there. He played at Oregon, so I was razzing – well, not razzing, but I was telling him I was pulling for Oregon the night before, you know, to win that game because I was hoping they'd get another shot at LSU if the BCS, you know, kind of shakes out the right way. And then he had already broke off that incredible run. I've always had a lot of respect for the way he runs. I mean, he's a big, tough, bruising back. And we've seen a lot of film on him this season, especially because we've been playing common opponents, playing the NFC South. And just told him, honestly, I felt like, you know, he has the talent and the ability to be great. And not that I feel like my word is going to have some major impact on him or anything, but I like to, you know, I like to be honest with those guys. And I enjoy the in-game conversation, but I really feel like he has an opportunity to be a great back in this league, and I told him as much, and just said, "Hey, man, stay healthy. You got a chance to be, you know, one of the best backs in this league. I believe that."
Let's look ahead to the Lions, and obviously their front four is what everyone talks about. I am no expert defensive coordinator, but it would seem with your success against the blitz, I think your passer rating is north of 140 when you're being blitzed, that the best way to beat you is to get pressure with your front four. What do you see from the Lions, and would you agree with that hypothesis?
Well,
if you're going to find a way to beat you, that would seem to be a good way to try and do it.
I would again say I don't think there's a recipe to beating us. A lot of people are talking about the way to beat us, but it hasn't happened yet. Nobody's beat us. We're 10-0. We found ways to win, and you know, against various defensive styles and coverages. But you know, this team really gets after the passer with their front four. They have two of the top ends for sure in the NFC, and in Van den Bosch and Averill, and guys up, you know, in the middle who can really get some pressure on the quarterback. So it's going to be, you know, protection, as we always talk about, is the most important thing when you're looking at trying to attack these guys. We got to make sure we're slowing those guys down a little bit and changing the launch angle. And
how do you do that? One of the questions that didn't make the Ask Aaron cut. I mean, are there things you can do, whether it's with the hard count or with check down passes or no huddle? I mean, are there things you can do against a front four like that?
Well, you got to mix it up. You can't let them just tee off every time. They play the real wide nine techniques where they're, you know, yard, couple yards almost outside of the tackles there and trying to set the edge on the pocket and also come at a direct angle to the quarterback. So, you know, it's the same stuff we saw in Tennessee for years when we play them in the preseason, same type of leverage by their ends. And it's important that we set that pocket with our tackles and make sure we're firm in the middle. But then at the same time, you can't just drop back five steps, seven steps every time and expect that you're going to have a clean pocket, because those guys are very talented, so you have to mix up the looks.
Is that unusual, that wide nine? I was talking to Balaga about it yesterday.
Yeah, nobody really does that.
Philly
does it a little bit, but they're definitely the widest techniques we're going to play.
What's I mean, I don't think we can have this conversation without asking you. The last time you were there, things obviously didn't go very well. How do you look back on that, and does it concern you at all?
No, it doesn't concern me at all. I think you have to play with confidence that, you know, you're gonna play and be healthy. You don't, you know, expect to get injured. That was you know, a situation. Just trying to do a little too much probably with that run. After I had the first down, I was trying to be a little more athletic than I am and paid for it. But I think as you look back, you realize that, you know, by not just doing what you know you should be doing, you can hurt the rest of your team, because that's a game that we feel, you know, probably should have won and lose 7-3. You know, it was frustrating being in the locker room trying to come out of that the fuzzy state that I was in and watching it on the TV. I was actually with Darren College, who had left the game as well with an injury, trying to root on those guys from the locker room. But
are you doing better on the sliding thing? Because you took we're very protective of our teammate at ESPN Milwaukee. You took another hit on one run.
Really looked worse than it felt.
Okay.
Yeah, I really did. That definitely wasn't a big hit at all.
Okay.
But I think I am sliding when I should be. I just occasionally think I might be able to get him an extra yard when I probably should just slide.
Do you what, speaking of concerns, what about the way the Lions play? I mean, Sue went to the NFL offices and met with Goodell. I'm sure you saw that Chicago game. I mean, there were some shots on Jay Cutler that were troubling. Is that something that you have to guard against? And is there something to making sure you don't react to that? Maybe not you, but your offensive linemen who protect you, or your defensive guys, whoever it might be.
We're just going to play the way we play. And, they're going to play the way they play. So there's not a whole lot of thoughts that are going to enter your mind about playing any differently. We're going to go through our game and play the way we like to play, and not react if anything happens after the whistle.
What's the scouting report? What are you looking at? What's jumped off the film to you as you've watched them?
I think they're better on the back end than they've been in the past. When you have that type of pass rush, it's made even better when you can cover, and they've added some guys in the mix, and Houston is playing better at corner, obviously adding Eric Wright to the mix. They're definitely better on the back end, and their linebackers are getting that experience and playing better as well. So I think as a defense, they're a lot better. And then it also helps when you have an offense like theirs that can score. You have a quarterback in Matthew Stafford is playing very well, and obviously the weapons that he has. So I think you need to make sure, as I said today, the most important part of this game is going to be the situational game, making sure we're good on third down, because we're, in the top 10, I believe, and they're number one or two on third downs. So it's going to be important for us to find ways to convert those. And in the red zone, they're right near the top, and as are we in us scoring touchdowns and them not giving up touchdowns in the red zone. So we need seven. We get in the red zone, and we need to convert those third downs.
Last thing before Ask Aaron, Troy Aikman was at the Lions practice, and he actually tried on Matthew Stafford's gloves and says that he's very impressed with them. Can you ever picture wearing gloves? It's working for him. I'm not criticizing him, but it just seems foreign to me as I watch him do it.
Yeah, I won't be wearing any gloves. Joe Montana actually wore gloves in a playoff game against Pittsburgh in, I want to say, 1994, and he started 0-10. And then he took them off and ended up leading them to a victory. But that was the first time he'd ever worn them in his career. I don't ever see wearing gloves. It's just I need that feeling in my hands. It's important to keep your hands and your head warm when it is cold. Kurt Warner had a lot of success wearing gloves at the end of his career, and he got the most out of them. But it's just not something I see myself doing ever.
Well, let's get to Ask Aaron so you can skedaddle here. The first one comes from Michael. Do you want to see Raji in the offense more, and is there any other defensive player you would like to see come in for a play? Clay Matthews threw his hat into the ring after the game, saying he could be the new Mike Vrabel if they gave him a chance.
Mike Vrabel may have the all-time highest catch per touchdown rating.
Crabtree's chasing him, though.
Slightly above Crabtree and Spencer Havner.
That's true.
Who was 9 catches, 5 touchdowns in 2009, to remind you on that. Clay is athletic. I wouldn't mind maybe, Sam Shields. One guy who I know would be all about it is Charles Woodson. Did it in college.
Even now.
Did it in college. We've joked around about it a few times. He would definitely be a guy to get the ball to at some point.
Matt wants to know, since you got your new helmet after your concussion the last time you played the Lions, you have not lost a single game. Is it almost like your favorite shoes? And did it take getting used to? And can you kind of explain how it protects you better?
I'm not really going to get into the specifics of the dynamics of the helmet. I'm not an expert in helmets, and I'm not going to try and be. But, yes, the helmet's been good to me. It's more comfortable this year than last year for whatever reason, and it's going to be with me the rest of my career.
This one comes from Brandon, and if this is correct, I learned something new. Since your favorite song is Forever by Ben Harper, what would you consider to be second, and what is your game day music? Is that accurate?
Lightning Crashes by Live and Forever by Ben Harper are my 1A and 1B.
Okay.
Game day is a lot softer stuff. I like some acoustic stuff. I listen to some Ben, some Chase Coy. Throw a name out there for you.
Okay.
But I love, you know, putting some Amber Lynn and some Counting Crows into the mix as well.
Matt Carney asked about you on Saturday night. He was disappointed.
He used to be in the mix. Yeah, he used
to. Still down on him. This one comes from Elliot. He says, every offensive series for every NFL team ends with the quarterback studying those pictures on the sideline. Why do they do the pictures? Why don't they use a laptop or an iPad? Do you ever wonder that?
I mean, I'm sure at some point it's going to get to something like that because of the technology.
Are those black and white pictures still?
Yes.
Are you able to get everything you need to get out of those?
Yeah, it gives an at the snap and a just after the snap view.
Okay.
And Tom Clements and I and Graham and Matt, we'll look at those and try and pick out maybe some things to remember if we get in that situation again.
Okay. Joe wants to know, how does the weather affect short and long passes, especially wind and rain? You had some rain in San Diego, and Ryan Grant said he thought maybe that was going to be a game where you guys ran the ball more. He said they were talking about how it's a mutter out there, and he pointed out that maybe the quarterback is a mutter too.
Yeah, you know what? The wind is probably the worst, then rain, and then just really, really cold. In that order, wind makes it difficult because the way that it can change the ball in the air, move it, but also if you're not throwing a perfect spiral, then it's going to really make that ball flutter and not cut through the wind at all. And then also when you're throwing downwind, which most people think is easier, it can change the difficulty of a deep pass because you have to factor in the nose of the ball probably not turning over and the ball being pushed more by the wind instead of a normal arc. If you think about a throw that goes up in the air, is pulled by gravity, the nose of the ball comes down. When you're getting that wind behind you, it's going to be hard to get the nose of the ball down, so you have to factor that in.
I'm really starting to understand why you scored what you scored on your SAT.
Physics.
You're a smart dude, man. I didn't realize that much went into this whole deal.
Yeah.
It's not just rare back. And
just a bunch of dumb jocks out there.
Finally, this one comes from Brian. An obvious ask, Aaron, for this week. What are you thankful for?
That's a deep question.
Brief, short.
Deep, very deep. I'm going to say my family first and foremost. Being able to grow up in a two-parent home, a very supportive mom and dad who would do anything for their kids. Very, very thankful for them and the sacrifices that especially my dad made, you know, in going back to school in his late 30s, and mom going back into the workforce to get us through those 3 years when he was in chiropractic college to provide a better life for his kids. That is a sacrifice that will never be forgotten. And as you get older, I think you appreciate your parents more. You know, obviously when you're a teenager, you think you know everything. And then you kind of get in your 20s, you miss mom's home cooking and not having that, you know, the responsibilities like when you were a kid. And just really thankful for mom and dad are real supportive. And two brothers to play sports with growing up and two of my closest friends.
Well, we will reconvene next week. What's your schedule like now? You guys get what, 4 days off? Is it?
Yeah, we get a few days off. That'd be nice.
Okay. All right. Can your other job keeps interfering with our little radio show here? Is the Tuesday schedule going to be normal next week?
I hope so.
Okay. Well, we
TBD.
We will. It'll keep people on their toes. We will talk to you next week, and we'll see if you're still undefeated after your trip to Detroit on Thanksgiving. You pointed this out when this run started, that in 2009 you had the same schedule and you ended up winning all three games. We'll see if that happens again. That is it for us. We will do it again next week. You have been listening to the Aaron Rodgers Show.
Happy Thanksgiving.